Welcome to Press Coverage. I'm Theo Greminger, and at Press Coverage, we're looking to bring in the sharpest guests. We're looking to find you the edges that you need to win in fantasy. And a lot of you guys are saying, win in fantasy. Theo, chill out, bro. It's January. We don't need to worry about winning in fantasy. Let's just worry about the NFL playoffs. But we're drafting. We're out here in the streets. And my guest today, Davis Maddock. Davis and I are participating in an early best ball draft on the FFPC called The Hard Way. We're going to dive in a little bit with what that is, but drafts are going on. I saw Underdog today just dropped two new ones. I just entered a bunch of 8-hour, you know, slow picks in January, and I'm in a bunch of FFPC ones. But the Hard Way one is always a pleasure this time of year, and then we run it back usually in June for a 350. But Davis, welcome back to Press Coverage. You came on last year, and we were like flag planting guys in the summer. Now it's a little bit different dynamic. What do you think about year-long drafting?
You know, right now I've got a real hunger for it to be doing it. Like we were in that DM thread, and I don't remember who brought it up, but they were like, "Oh, are we going to do this?" And I'm like, "Absolutely, I'm in." Underdog just launched their contest. I'm like, "All right, I need to go cook up some rankings. I need to get into it." Now, am I going to feel that way in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, a month around? Am I going to feel that way in March? Like maybe not so much. Might not be as gung-ho. I think it's because I was so into the playoff drafts. I'd gotten really into doing both iterations of the playoff stuff. So that is like a fun drafting environment. I love doing that stuff. So I kind of have the itch right now.
Yeah, I love it personally. I feel like this is like a low-key good time of year for completing dynasty trades and also for these early best balls because I don't know about you, but I feel like you get kind of you can find an edge in early drafting. Not in the room we're in, but in some regular drafts. I mean, you know, free agency, you also have the NFL draft. I think you find some drafters that don't want to dive into the unknown. You can find edges there. Would you agree on that?
I 100% think that's true. I mean, even just right now being a little bit more up to date on the rookies, having just thought about what sequence the rookies should go in for rookie drafts, and then thinking about, okay, what are those sequences going to play out for their rookie year? Like, am I in on Braylon Allen as a full rookie contract guy, or do I just think Braylon Allen's going to be Brian Robinson Jr., where he is going to be chewed up and spit out by year two? You know, I think running backs just in general, probably having a feeling like we're in this hard way draft. And I just took Cody Schrader with my very last pick in the 26th round. I'm like, Cody Schrader, probably 93 times you play his career out, maybe never even gets a carry, you know, just ends up being Zach Evans. But like those 7 times he gets on the field, you know, he could be, I don't want to say Kyren Williams. Let's say Gus Edwards.
Let's say Danny Woodhead. Let's say Danny Woodhead. A safer
sure. Some, one. Yeah, sure. Something like that, where he ends up getting 130 touches over the final 7 games of his rookie season or something like that.
No, I love it. And I think this is when you take these little dart throws. And last year, I looked through our board from last year when we drafted. Well, first of all, let's take a step back. People hear us saying the hard way. So the FFPC is a sponsor here at Player Profiler, and it's where I play a lot and Davis plays a lot. It's a great place to play. We highly recommend it. But every year we do sort of like an invitation-only best ball draft, and then we also have an iteration for the hard way where it's their 350 tournament, which is pretty similar. You have a lot of crossover in terms of the people who participate in these two drafts, but it brings a really good mix of people who are either content creators in the industry mixed with some of the best high stakes players in the FFPC. And in this case, some of the best ball players in the FFPC. So you have guys like Davis, who's very well known for content, but Davis also has a lot of skin in the game and plays high stakes fantasy. I was a high stakes guy, and now I'm doing more content. And then this year, John Daigle, who everybody knows for content, but is also a really, really good drafter himself, he joined up. But we also have the Go Bills trio, which took down 2 FFPC main events. We have Abib Agbatoba, who took down 2, at the time, football guys, now fantasy pros, 350 tournaments. We have Austin Martin, who has taken down the postseason tournament. We have Noah Riddell, who's one of the best, you know, really one of the best high stakes minds around. I'm forgetting a number of guys here. Dan Williamson.
In like 2018,
Darren Armani, Fantasy Mojo's in this. Todd Burrows from Best Ball is really good best ball drafter. I mean, we're loaded. And if I'm forgetting anybody, apologies, but we're not going to say all 12. But bottom line is it's really good. It's really competitive. And Davis, like you bring up the unknown guys like Cody Schrader. But like last year, I specifically remember Austin, our friend Austin Martin, he took Jahmyr Gibbs in like the fourth round. And, you know, at the time it looked like this was a bullish pick, but it didn't look like a steal. And then a couple of months later, fast forward, you get those great values. So like you bring up a guy like Braylon Allen, and I had Braylon Allen as one of my flag plants, and I've seen you're on him as well. I think that's cool. I think we both see it the same way. Big back from Wisconsin, 19 years old, a ton to like about him. But if he goes at the end of the second, that pick you made is looking like money in the bank. So it's like these big wide variables for a lot of these young players. And even a guy like Malik Nabers, you know, let alone Marvin Harrison Jr. I think the market's starting to get correct on Marvin Harrison Jr. We're going to talk about him a little bit. You sniped me on him in this draft. But like Nabers, like Rome Odunze, a couple of these guys, they could be looked at as like huge bargains if they go in like the top six. So really, really interesting to look at. But let's start right at the top. I'm going to throw the board on the screen. And before we take a break, Davis, where are you at the 101 right now? There's some people who look at it and it's about as cut and dry as you think. It's Christian McCaffrey. That's the guy that's going to lead me to the promised land. But you over the years, Davis, have been an age-averse guy. You've been a little bit of an ageist as I have. How comfortable are you taking a will-be 28-year-old running back with your 101 when we get into like the summer? Are you there or are you looking to pivot?
I definitely have been an ageist, but I've been a McCaffrey 101 guy every year except last year, which, you know, it feels so, so bad given the seasons that that Chase and Jefferson had with, I mean, I guess they were very good when they played. They were both just missed time with injury. I think honestly, the tiebreaker probably right now is that CeeDee Lamb just had his greatest season of all time, but I actually don't trust the Cowboys to stick to that super pass heavy game plan year over year. I think that when they have a real functional running back instead of Tony Pollard, you know, no disrespect intended. I think CeeDee might see fewer targets this upcoming season than he saw this last season. Tyreek has the same ageist problem that McCaffrey has. Jefferson may or may not have Kirk Cousins back by week one, right? Kirk Cousins was an Achilles injury in week eight. So he's going to be pressing it to get back. And then, yeah, I think there are enough niggling little, I don't know how I feel about that there, where I just am like, yeah, McCaffrey, is he just like, especially because when you watch him play, you see no evidence of any kind of physical decline. Like it's, and you know, a lot can change in 8 months, but my guess is McCaffrey is just going to be the same dude again 8 months from now.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to like when we track like the FFPC main event or the 350, if we're on this trajectory, he's going to be like a 75% of drafts he goes at the 101. And then you'll see a little bit of a mix in people trying to be unique and mix it up with I think CeeDee Lamb will end up becoming the chalk 102. But we're going to dive into that as well. We're going to get Davis's take on who is RB2 right now. We're also going to discuss early tight end strategy, and we're just going to dive through this entire board and give our thoughts on the best values, some of the best selections, and we're going to cover it all right here on Press Coverage. Stick with us here.
This episode is brought to you by Rival Fantasy. Rival Fantasy, the coolest fantasy platform not enough people know about, but they will once I'm done, baby, because they're always innovating. They just rolled out seasonal leagues. We set them up for patrons, for our listeners, and they funded over $1,000 in payouts. That's what Rival's all about. They're always innovating. They already had the fantasy book where you can take overs and unders, stack them up, multiply your payout, but then they added challenges so you can set your own lines and put them out there for the community, and then you can browse the community's lines and say, hey, this guy's crazy, I'm gonna take the other side. It's cool. And they have fantasy bingo. Rival Fantasy is reminding me how much fun I can have with fantasy football and use that promo code PLAYER. The promo code is PLAYER. They give you a $100 instant deposit match plus $25 plus a free play. That promo code is PLAYER for up to $125 in deposit bonus and a free play. You can't beat it.
Welcome back to Press Coverage. Theo Greminger with Davis Maddock. We have the board up. If you're listening on a podcast, we're going to discuss some of the selections. But if you're watching right now on YouTube, you can easily see it. And if you're listening on a podcast and you want to go back and consume this, just go to Player Profile or YouTube. But Davis, 101 Christian McCaffrey to our friends, the Go Bills guy, Go Bills guys, Dom and Sean, just super, super sharp trio of drafters, took down two main events. We get away from that one. Then John Daigle takes CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb starts off the run of wide receivers. Basically, CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think that's going to kind of be somewhat chalky for wide receivers 1 through 5. Of those five guys, which gives you the most trepidation, or is it all extremely correct?
St. Brown would give me the most trepidation because that profile of guy is just going to have a ton of touchdown variance year to year. Like, St. Brown's profile in terms of like target depth and route combinations and things is like much more Keenan Allen than it is Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase. Obviously, we are totally picking nits here at the 1-6, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, probably the Lions passing offense will likely be even better next season than it was this season. The thing you would have to worry about with him would be, is 164 targets over 17 games, is that the high end of his range of outcomes, or does any kind of tertiary wide receiver, right? So that could be anything from Jameson Williams becomes a real player who plays 80% of the snaps and earns a target share commensurate with his skill level, or, you know, whatever the free agency move is. Because it's very hard, you know, as we actually kind of saw in that conference championship game, kind of hard to make plays on offense when you're having to dedicate throws to, Anthony Firkser and Josh Reynolds. Like you would prefer those guys to be further down the pecking order. You know, like, for example, I'm just looking at this board right now. I think I'm going Nacua over St. Brown. I think, you know, and again, very close picking nits. The biggest thing I have different than this board is Breece might be, to me, like the third pick, the third or fourth pick, actually.
So let's backtrack on that one, because I was going to ask you, you know, first of all, it's fundamentally, so Breece Hall is clearly your RB2 right now, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so then Breece Hall, because of kind of scarcity at the position and because of his potential, you know, you got to think things are going to be a lot easier for him as a runner. And if they keep him in this sort of passing down work, these sort of target numbers in a much better offense, I mean, he could explode and be the RB1 overall quite easily. When would you start considering him in a draft like this? Are you considering him after Lamb and ahead of that cluster of wide receivers, or you want to make a stand for, you know, Jefferson and Chase still overhaul and like a, and let's say, Davis, you're a one ticket guy. You're not a drafting 800 teams,
sure,
and you
sure
want to make that decision.
I'm going McCaffrey, Jefferson, Lamb, Breece, Chase would be my top five. Which obviously the big question mark there would be Tyreek Hill. And maybe I'll change my mind about that when it gets a little bit closer, but it's just hard for me to kind of go back and like reimagine the Dolphins season where Tyreek is, you know, I mean, the end of the season, Tyreek's not even playing 75% of the snaps. You know, he's 66% of the snaps in the playoffs, you know, ends the season. No one would believe you if you said this, if you told people that the last 100-yard game that Tyreek had was the week 13 game against the Commanders, they'd be like, no way, that totally does not line up with what I remember about the season. And obviously Tyreek is still a great player. He's in the absolute perfect system. Like, McDaniel's going to get him the ball. it's just like a, it's really, it's just like, okay, it's a 30-year-old speed wide receiver and this weird kind of offensive setup. I get some weird feelings about that, but I could change my mind.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. And I think that the pursuit of 2,000 yards and continually playing banged up kind of took a lot out of him. And we saw it at the end. Does that carry over to the next season? I'm not sure. Anytime you start taking a wide receiver like that at 3 overall, 2 overall, there's always going to be a little bit of risk when they, you know, if he loses a single step, and then we also have to factor in maybe Devon Achain sees a much bigger role, and they want to get him more utilized. Jalen Waddle could take a step forward. I mean, there's all kinds of variables because there's talent on that roster. I like what you brought up about Puka Nacua, because Puka Nacua is a guy which we all look at as a guy who really needs a lot of targets. But there's nothing blocking that. He's going to get a lot of targets. Whereas I think he'll probably out target Amon-Ra St. Brown next year. Everything being equal, because you bring up Jameson Williams. I'll also say Jahmyr Gibbs only had 52 or so receptions this year, and Sam LaPorta could easily handle 20 more targets next year. So it could be a little more balance. Your thoughts on Nacua and the value he presents?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the milk does not get unspoiled all that often. You know, that's kind of one of my guiding principles. So that obviously pertains to Kupp. Like, it is much less likely that Kupp increases his target share relative to Puka Nacua's in 2024 than the other way around, right? So Nakua's target share is just going to be what it was. Nacua is younger, you know, like he, and I just like, I don't really have any concerns that this is like a Mike Williams, not the Mike Williams you're thinking of, the old Mike Williams, Oklahoma Mike Williams for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers situation, where it's just like a 1 year sort of blip on the radar. I think like Nacua is pretty much set up to come in and come close to leading the NFL in receptions. You actually could argue he got a little bit unlucky in his star-studded rookie season. He only scored 6 touchdowns. I mean, he had a better rookie season, really, considering the environment, than Jamar Chase, but just didn't have, I think Chase had 13 touchdowns as a rookie. Nacua scored 6. I mean, you know, that's just not, and I guess if I'm going to make the touchdown argument with St. Brown, maybe I have to do that with Nacua, but give him 10 touchdowns with a similar yardage output, and you're looking at, I mean, that's like the third or fourth best player in fantasy.
So the other two running backs, so Breece Hall goes 10 overall, but we also saw Jahmyr Gibbs go 9 overall, and Bijan Robinson was your pick at 11 overall. Those two guys, what sort of value do Gibbs and Robinson bring for you at the end of the first round? Is this just sort of the exceptional upside year two, explosion type player that drafters should be looking at right now? And then talk a little bit about how you think Bijan Robinson will fit in on a Zach Robinson offense as opposed to the chaos that we saw under Arthur Smith.
I mean, yeah, it's like the simplest bet in the world, which was Bijan pretty much looked the part to me. Maybe you could argue the explosive runs, the explosive plays weren't there quite as much as you would have wanted them, with him being a rookie, but like, wasn't a situation where you watch Bijan Robinson and you're like, oh, you know, whatever he got away with in the Big 12, he actually can't do in the NFL at all. So I think there's a huge tier, like a giant tier break, actually, after these four guys. So McCaffrey's in a tier of his own, then it's Gibbs, then it's Breece, then it's Bijan. And then to me, it's like giant. We might see a 50-point separation between Gibbs, Breece, Bijan, and then these next five guys, right? Just because their roles are so different in the passing game. I mean, put Bijan Robinson in the role that Kyren Williams got last season, you know, roughly speaking, in that kind of West Coast offense. Yeah, I mean, he's scoring 22 fantasy points per game or something like that. And obviously a huge part of this is thinking, well, yeah, the new coaching staff in Atlanta is just not going to be stubborn about like, okay, we got to get Tyler Allgeier these goal line carries. We got to get Cordarrelle Patterson 5 touches a game, you know, and maybe they will, and maybe this will be a total wrong read, but I'm guessing that bringing in new coaches, I'm guessing that part of the interviewing process was like, okay, we just took this guy, what was it, eighth overall, 12th overall. Like, just like, come on, we got to get this guy the ball.
Yeah, eighth overall. And then Jahmyr Gibbs, the last year's 12th overall selection, just looks fantastic yesterday in the NFL playoffs. I think he's the kind of guy that might rise a little bit during the summer. Davis, are you, if Gibbs was on the board when you were selecting Bijan, would you have gone Gibbs over Bijan, or are you a Bijan over Gibbs guy?
No, I definitely would have taken Gibbs. I think it's, you know, Gibbs is going to be the better per touch guy for almost their entire career, but it's actually kind of the same thing where if the governor gets taken off for Gibbs at any point, whether that be, you know, a Montgomery season ending injury, or maybe they just decide like Montgomery, you know, it's the thunder and lightning thing, you know, like the Chiefs, when they went from Thomas Jones out carrying Jamal Charles to just deciding it was Jamal Charles's team, and the governor completely went off, and it was like he had two of the greatest fantasy seasons you'll ever see. I mean, Gibbs, I think is, he's young, so you don't want to say that, but I think he's that kind of player where he could kind of deliver like 24, 25 fantasy points per game.
Yeah, for me, I actually have Jahmyr Gibbs right ahead of Breece Hall because I think, like you said, I think he could take that huge leap forward. And unlike Breece Hall, I don't have any questions about the offensive line. And I think that just the offense as a whole, I have less questions about. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be a thing next year and elevate Wilson and Hall, but I don't have to guess. I know what that line's offense is. And I'll say, Davis, as a mental exercise, if I would have told you last August that Jahmyr Gibbs has 52 receptions for the season, where would you have guessed he would have finished in the RB scoring? It certainly wouldn't have been RB8 because the whole narrative for him was this guy could be Reggie Bush or Alvin Kamara out the gate and give you a 75, 80 reception. So I don't know. I think it's incredibly scary. I think that might be the rational coaching to just get Gibbs a bunch of targets next year, albeit if it takes away from other guys, just because it's such an easy source of positive yardage every time he gets the ball in space.
Yeah. And fits well with, fits well with Jared Goff's skill set too, obviously, you know,
for sure.
Goff, not always the most accurate down the field thrower. Obviously the I haven't even mentioned this for St. Brown or for Gibbs yet, and we definitely should, which is, you know, Ben Johnson is probably going to be the head coach of the Washington Commanders any time now that they're out of the playoffs. I expect that to be done in a week or so. And normally what happens in these situations is the guy who is his, you know, lieutenant, his next up, the tight ends coach or whatever, is going to get promoted to offensive coordinator. There's no guarantee of that. You know, Ben Johnson could say, I want to bring all my guys with me. And I don't think Dan Campbell's going to be the type of guy that's like, you know, going to keep anyone from fulfilling their dream or making their money or what, you know, it just seems unlike him. So we could be looking at, you know, a Schottenheimer popping up, or, you know, you never really know in these situations, like, because the Lions have been locked in on trying to win playoff games, but they could definitely take a step back on offense next season. That's really my only concern.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And then you poured a little bit of cold water on this second round group of running backs, but one we should talk about in particular right now is incredibly polarizing in both Dynasty and in redraft, and that's Kyren Williams. You brought up the Kyren Williams workload and his usage. Incredible. The scoring, incredible. Multiple 30-point games, averaged over 20 points per game. Still is a young player. This was in year one for him because of all the injuries, but it was year two technically. But it's a litmus test. A lot of dynasty managers want to get the hell out because they've seen this story. It's a tale as old as time. And then you have some redraft managers who think this is like incredible value at the 1-2 turn. And when we start drafting these underdogs this week, Kyren's going to end up being like 106. Where are you at on Kyren Williams? Where do you see this story playing out? Do you think this is something, a player you want to avoid, this sort of profile? Or do you think when he gets in this like mid-second, you got to take the chance?
Yeah, I got to keep it real. I've been playing fantasy football too long to take guys like this. You know, that. Now, I've also been on the other side of this, which was the Clyde Edwards-Helaire thing, where I was still taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire as a second-round pick after he really was not very good as a rookie and basically ended up in a three-way timeshare with a bunch of other veteran running backs. But by and large, you were going to have a much harder time finding historic comps for Kyren Williams that end with success than ones that end with guys getting replaced, right? Alfred Morris, Philip Lindsay, you know, it's just, it's all they name your favorite 1 year wonder in fantasy football. It was probably a guy in a situation a lot like Kyren. Now that is a good point that, that Mr. Toronto Dave made, which is that it's way more palatable for Kyren in season long. The thing I would caution people about is that, you know, Kyren, I think, is probably going to be very sensitive to if they bring in another running back they like even a little bit, you know, enough to play 25% of the snaps, 30% of the snaps, because the workload that he was getting, I mean, it's we're talking like, I mean, I think he probably played the most snaps per game of any running back in the league. And I would have to go back and check that, but I'm going to guess he probably percentage of snaps like led the league when he was out there. It was insane.
Yeah, for sure. And it's weird because the whole, you know, idea of Kyren Williams was he was going to give you so much as a receiver, and you didn't see that to that a large extent. So I don't know. I think his role could develop next year. Right now, Sean McVay just loves him so much, but was it because of how ugly the rest of the running back options were on the roster? I think he really likes Kyren Williams, but I don't know. It's a weird one. There's got to be a point where I would consider him, but he hasn't been a guy that I would look to target, certainly in the first round at all. But let's talk about the other four running backs that were selected. Jonathan Taylor actually was the first one selected, then followed by Kyren Williams, Devon Achane, Travis Etienne, and then Saquon Barkley. So that's your second round, give you five running backs in the second. Do any of those guys create any excitement for you, Davis, or is it all sort of a void at that cost?
I mean, I think this is probably like the most brutal, actually very similar to how it was last year. Like, what second round pick did well in 2023? Like, they all suck. Tony Pollard ended up being on Underdog and above average advance rate player just because he wasn't a total zero, basically. You know, Taylor is like you kind of know exactly what you're getting at this point. Like, although, you know, the Anthony Richardson stuff, there was concern last year that Anthony Richardson would just be like a disaster. And like, clearly it's not the case. He's going to be good when he's in there. They'll have Minshew as a backup. He'll mostly be fine. Achane is like, I mean, he's the ultimate sort of, you just, I don't know. It's like, life's like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. So it, you know, because he missed multiple times with injury. He had multiple different lower body injuries. He weighs 180 pounds. No one denies watching him that he's like completely game-breaking, unbelievable, incredible, talented player. But can he handle 280 touches a season at his size? Like truthfully, probably not. My guess would be, now, am I going to take Devon Achane like a lot in these drafts? Absolutely, because I can't imagine going through a season without, like, for example, Achane versus Barkley is like not close to me, just given their offensive environments. Etienne, you could tell me that the Jaguars get their shit together next year, you know, and that they all just kind of stay healthy, and that Lawrence is not like banged up, and that like it just all kind of works out for them in a way that it didn't at the end of the season. I would buy that, but I mean, Achane is like just as explosive as Etienne, but on the better offense right now.
So let's dive into one more group of running backs. We see no running backs selected in the third round at all. And then we see this trio of guys that will be entering their third year in the league that all had fantasy success last year. I selected Rashad White at the 401. Then we also saw James Cook off the board at the 404. And then Ken Walker goes at the 407. So all three of those guys, along with Kyren and Breece Hall, entering their second years in the league, do any of those three guys get you excited, or do multiple ones? I know you've spoke glowingly about Ken Walker in the past. Do you still view him as your preferred of those three?
That's actually, to me, that was a nice little pocket of value in this draft. I think all of those guys are going to end up being more expensive in August, you know, than they are right now. You know, Walker, it feels like Walker just defaulted to his ADP from 2023. But Charbonnet didn't really take any of the important work away from him. You know, he lost some third downs and stuff, but Walker wasn't really, that wasn't really what he was being drafted for regardless. You know, like, for example, I bet push comes to shove, ADPs that I think are going to drop here based on this board, I think Diggs ends up going way later. I think that Cooper Kupp ends up going later. Mike Evans will go later. Jalen Waddle will go later, I think. You know, I think we see James Cook, if they make no addition, you know, so if it's just Ty Johnson and whomever, you know, in the backfield, you know, no serious addition in the backfield, I think he's going to be a riser. White is a difficult one because if you want to talk about a guy, he's actually very similar to Kyren Williams. He's just based off of all the usage. Like Rashad White is a good player. No reason to bench him or anything, but he's not like this phenomenal talent. He's pretty sensitive for like workload related stuff. But yeah, I think actually every running back here from White all the way to, I don't love the Tajay Spears pick.
Well, we're gonna talk about Tajay Spears in a second. But White, you know, I'll say, like, I took White there, and it's sort of a somewhat structural. I like White in that range. I'm a little surprised that like you said, he didn't go a little earlier because he had, you know, basically a top six season. And the whole knock on him being an inefficient runner, he was an inefficient runner again, but he's getting you like 3.9 yards per carry, but he catches passes consistently and he gets all the goal line work. And I think they like him. So I'm in on Rashad White at cost. I'm in on James Cook. I think I agree with you. I think I'm in on all three of those guys when I can get them in the fourth round. And I think that you're right. I think they'll actually correct. I actually wonder if the new regime doesn't talk up Ken Walker a little more, because the Charbonnet pick seemed a little Pete Carroll. Now we have a new head coach in Seattle on the way. We could actually see a bump for Ken Walker. So that's an interesting one. Running back wise, the fifth round, you get Isaiah Pacheco. That one makes sense. Tajay Spears, Alvin Kamara. And then we had a run of guys in the sixth round. Tony Pollard, which you were not a fan of the pick in our league chat. You know, I agree with you. I think he's pretty dusty. Then Ramondre Stevenson and Josh Jacobs. But let's focus in on Tajay Spears, because Davis, this is a guy that I called this year's James Cook and Rashad White. You see Abib Agbatoba. Yep, it was Abib Agbatoba, who's one of the sharpest guys with receipts to prove it, on Tajay Spears there on that pick. And I've seen a lot of other, like, let's just say that there's a lot of sharp money. You know, guys that are well-known high-stakes guys are really diving in on Tajay at cost right now. I'm also seeing it in the Dynasty streets, where you're seeing a lot of, like, slight overpays, thinking Tajay is going to be like a summer riser. You don't seem overly enthusiastic about Tajay. Tell us your thoughts on him.
To me, it just seems like, well, I guess actually it's probably a good buy, because it's pretty binary. Either his ADP ends up being higher than this, or it ends up being way lower. And so it's a pretty good barbell strategy to take. But that seems like an obvious spot to me, where there's almost no chance they go into the season having their running back depth chart be Julius Chestnut, Tajay Spears, and Kari Blossom game. That would be a big destination for a free agent running back, for one of these running back, you know, Jonathan Brooks, a Braylon Allen, whoever. Now, obviously, it's a little bit different because Vrabel is not the coach anymore, so we don't, you know, we definitely cannot assume that this is going to be a team that wants to run the ball, you know, 900 times or whatever. So maybe Tajay Spears kind of is in a de-escalated Jahmyr Gibbs style role or something like that, you know, where he is the pace and space back. Also the other, I mean, I think the Titans might just be like dog water. You know, they might be one of the three or four worst offenses in football. If they make no addition at quarterback and DeAndre Hopkins says, I don't really want to play for this terrible team anymore. You know, it's Nick Westbrook-Ikhine and a rookie wide receiver and Treylon Burks. And it's just like, I mean, obviously we're dealing with so much uncertainty drafting this early, but the Titans feel like one of the least certain situations.
Let's manifest 130 targets for Treylon Burks because of necessity. I'm okay with that outcome. But Tajay is definitely an interesting one. Davis, now we ripped through the sixth round running backs. I don't think we really need to dive into any of those guys. Josh Jacobs, I think, makes sense there. Mondre, I'm not that enthusiastic about, but I specifically want to ask you about your pick in the seventh round, Javonte Williams. You went Javonte Williams in the seventh, and then Braylon Allen, who we already discussed, in the eighth. But Javonte's a guy which a lot of people still have hope for, and then a lot of people are kind of moving on from. They're seeing him a little bit more like a purgatory guy that doesn't offer you that massive ceiling that they had hoped for with him. Do you look at him as a wider range guy, or was that a structural pick for you?
Definitely more of a structural pick. Like, I just am sitting there in that draft and I'm like, well, I need, actually looking back on it, I think I wish I would have taken Chase Brown instead of him. I just think like a better range of outcomes for him. Like, there's really no scenario to me. I mean, Javonte, once people start drafting and they realize that like the Broncos, like, I don't think Russ will be their quarterback. And so it'll be like a little bit more normal there or whatever, but like his ceiling is probably like a fifth round pick. That's probably about as good as it can get for him. Whereas if, you know, when Mixon is cut and they don't really add another running back, like Chase Brown could get the Tony Pollard rise. You know, Chase Brown could be like a third round pick, actually, I think, if really looking at the board right now. Yeah, Javonte is a structural pick. I think his role, like, literally probably remains the same, and it won't be P. Ryan. It'll be someone else. You know, it'll be Jaleel McLaughlin gets four touches a game. And, you know, just some, you know, Pierre Thomas comes back, like, unretires to come play for Sean Payton or something. Like, literally, it could just be anyone is playing the passing down. So Javonte gets 180 carries. He gets 40 targets, scores five touchdowns, and just kind of churns along.
Yeah, I love your call on Chase Brown. That was a really interesting one. And then there's a couple of running backs that, you know, I see in, like, the 11th round that I thought were interesting. The Kendre Millers, Jerome Ford. Nick Chubb could be a cut candidate, and Jerome Ford showed that he can catch the football. I think he's a little underrated right now in these early drafts, and I liked my selection of Roschon Johnson, getting him, you know, very end of the 11th, at the 11th, 12th. So I think we can move on from running back, but I want to get into tight end. Davis, you took the tight end one off the board at Sam Laporta. So you started off with Bijan Robinson at the 11 overall. I drafted at 12. I went Garrett Wilson, A.J. Brown. And then you followed up with Sam Laporta. Let's take a bird's eye view for tight end. This year, I think that the community is really excited about tight end as a whole. We have maybe more tight ends that we can paint a picture for making a big impact for our fantasy teams, but we're not going to see a first round tight end, even in tight end premium, even when we get to main event season. Would you agree with that statement?
I think we might, man. The people are horny for Sam Laporta. The people are also going to, Trey McBride is also going to be a second round pick. That is at 312. That might be the cheapest that he goes, period. You know, like if the Cardinals take Marvin Harrison Jr. and don't do anything at quarterback and they make like two good offensive line signings, like, people are going to be all the way back in on the Cardinals. People are going to be like, it's time. They're scoring 24 points a game. Like, it's all the way back. I mean, Laporta just feels like the net. I mean, Laporta did already score the most fantasy points of any tight end. Like, he literally has already been the tight end one as a 22-year-old. And yeah, probably he might step back a little bit, actually, in terms of like pure volume. If they do make a move for a set, like, what if T. Higgins is a Detroit Lion, you know, something, if they make a move like that. But he actually was like not super efficient as a rookie. So you actually would probably expect him to get a little bit more efficient just as he like learns the position and everything. Like, Hawkinson's most efficient year was actually the year he got traded. Hawkinson used to be like the super inefficient guy who played 97% of the snaps. But really what it was about for me was I was like, I'm not starting running back. No chance am I taking DJ Moore here. No chance am I taking Olave here. No, I actually almost took Debo, who didn't go until the 3-2. Like, so structurally I thought, the three guys who were in my queue were guys who didn't go into the other guys weren't into the third round. It was Laporta, Debo, and Mark Andrews were the guys in my queue.
Yeah, and again, we're super, super early drafting, but I think the other thing you bring up structurally is if you're drafting near the turn right now in an FFPC and you don't take Laporta where you did at, like, let's say anywhere between 11 and 15, Like that, I think, will be his consistent range. You're running the risk that you're going to miss out on your guy McBride as well if you want to go early tight end. Mark Andrews and Travis Kelce, though, Davis, they go. Kelce goes at the 209, and we saw Mark Andrews go at the 307. So both those guys go right after Laporta, but close enough. Where are you at on those two guys right now in terms of your outlook for them in 2024?
I mean, they look probably to me like the two best values on the board, maybe just period, right? Where Kelce's production, we're talking about a guy who's, I mean, look, we're doing this on January 29th. We're doing this in 3 weeks. Travis Kelce might be retired. Right. I actually think if they win the Super Bowl, I think that's probably it. I think he probably just calls it and says it's not really going to get much better. He's due a ton of money, so maybe I'm wrong. I think he's due like $16 million a season or something like that, so maybe that's wrong. But regardless, like the years of Travis Kelce being like the difference maker at tight end, I just think are done. You know, he can still do it. It's whatever happens to every great athlete is they can still do it, but they can't do it every down, every snap, every play. It's just too hard on their bodies. And we're seeing that in the playoffs right now. Like Kelce on Saturday or on Sunday against the Ravens made maybe one of the two best plays of his whole career, catching a touchdown and converting this great third down play. But like, it's not that long ago that they couldn't get a first down against the Raiders, you know?
I told Davis before the show, I'm like, we're not going to dive too much into the NFL playoffs because every other show you're listening to today is, but gosh, that third down play
was insane.
That was insane. And then the touchdown on Hamilton was like the statement to start the game out, attack him, their best defender, a guy who hasn't given a touchdown all year. So yeah, I'm with you. I think they both make sense there. We're also seeing a great deal of enthusiasm for this rounds 5 and 6 tight end group. I've seen that there's been like an intense tight end cleanup.
No, they all suck. Kittle and Bowers are the only ones I want to click.
Okay,
there, I think.
So you're anti-Kincaid in the fifth. I'm surprised by that, Davis. Expand on that.
Yeah, because the most obvious moves for the Bills this offseason are going to be replacing the need to throw consistent 7-yard passes just to keep the sticks moving. Either Diggs is going to take a pay cut or he's going to be traded. They are going to take a wide receiver with their first round pick. I would make a wide receiver for the Bills first round pick -180 right now, probably.
Yeah, me too.
And Kincaid is, I mean, look, the dude scored 2 touchdowns the whole season. He did not have a 100-yard game. He is actually it's so funny. Kincaid's rookie season was like the people who loved him got to say they were right because he played a lot more than they thought because Dawson Knox got hurt and was not very good. But then the people who said you can't take Kincaid at this ADP because he'll just be a slot wide receiver, we're also right because that's all he was. He was like a pretty inefficient, close to the line of scrimmage, slot wide receiver. So there at the 5, although Evan Engram, absolutely hilarious. I'm prejudiced against him too because I just remember how bad he sucked forever. 4th most catches in the NFL. It's insane.
It's the question, like when you get people, you're like, how many catches did Evan Engram have this year? Don't look it up. And they'll think like he had a good season. They'll say, oh, he caught like 88 passes. And then, you know, you actually look and he's like Jarvis Landry stats.
Yeah. Yeah. Which on FFPC is huge.
Massive.
Like massive.
I had a couple of dynasty teams with Evan Engram that all cashed. It was just like easy money plugging him in the flex or the tight end spot. I'll push back on Kincaid. I'll take a bullish approach on him in this fifth, sixth round. We can butt heads on that one. But I want to get with Jake Ferguson, I think, is a fade. In the 6th round. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like they took Schoonmaker in the 2nd last year. Like they will probably have a better 2nd/3rd wide receiver than Cooks Gallup. Like it just, I mean, Jake Ferguson is like the Dalton Schultz. You know, you could just get replaced at any time because your only asset is being on the field. You're a very fungible player.
So you're not buying the David Njoku value here, despite his incredible play to end the season. Do you view that as more of a that was
Flacco's
the
not going to be the
Flacco
quarterback.
And, yeah, okay.
Flacco's not going to be the quarterback because Watson's going to be the quarterback and they're going to go back to 198 yards per game on offense.
I agree with you on the Brock Bowers being exceptional value there. I thought about taking him, you know, when I was selecting the wide receivers, I almost took him, but I liked the value of Rome Odunze and George Pickens right there at the 5-6 made sense to me, especially structurally, but it hurt me to pass on Brock Bowers. Talk about where you think Brock Bowers will end up. Let's say Brock Bowers goes fifth overall to the Los Angeles Chargers to be Harbaugh's like weapon.
Third round
You're
pick.
Talking about, yeah, third
yeah,
round.
Third round pick.
Okay, so let me throw out an uglier one. Brock Bowers goes 15th overall to the Indianapolis Colts, which I think is his floor. Draft
that feels
capital
pretty
wise.
Good still. That feels pretty good still because his target competition is Josh Downs, you know, and running backs. Like there's really nothing stopping him from getting 110 targets as a rookie in that scenario, right? I think the so I just am pulling up grinding the mocks right here.
Yeah.
His expected draft position right now is like 8th overall.
Yes.
So that leaves him, and if you actually look at the teams that are going up top, it actually is like a lot of spots that could be awesome for fantasy. Chargers, Cardinals, now obviously the Giants and the Titans would be a nightmare. Chicago like could be, you know, depending on what happens there, could be good. The Jets could be amazing, right? If it's Rodgers, it could be incredible. Really, the only spots you don't want him to go to are really it's just the Giants and the Titans. You're just like, then that's death.
That would be awful. That would be really, really bad. The Titans one would be super, super ugly, but he would be arguably their number one receiver out the gate. So I could kind of paint a picture there. Giants one, I would one. Bowers definitely looks good there. I don't think we need to dive into the next group of tight ends. I'll ask you a quick one though. Are you more into Luke Musgrave or Tucker Kraft? Do you think that's closer than some people think, or is that a Musgrave?
Tucker Kraft, man. I think it's Kraft. I think Kraft just played way better. Like, I think it's definitely a scenario where they're like, all right, good. We're good at tight end. Like, we don't need to, this is not a position of need that we need to continue to address. They're fine playing both of them. They're fine rotating them. But it was a situation until Musgrave got that concussion where was it a shoulder injury? Maybe it was both. He got banged up a good bit, but he was playing like 90% of the snaps. And then when he got back from that injury, it was like he went down, he came back from this injury and he was playing like 35% of the snaps. Even in the playoff games, Kraft was still playing a good bit. Yeah, 28%, 27%, and 15% coming off of the injury where he had not played less than 67% in any game before that. So I'm actually more of a Kraft guy.
And if you're scoring at home, Luke Musgrave goes in the 12th round and then Tucker Kraft goes in the 13th round. So I think that there's a lot of best ball managers that are going to say, I'm going to look to grab both of them. It's difficult because they're going right around one another. I think I would attempt that strategy from like the one spot or the 12th spot. If I'm drafting at the ends, I could maybe pull that one off with a snake. And I think you'll get pretty good value doing that, especially in 28-round best balls. Let's pivot over to quarterback, Davis. You see your usual suspects. Josh Allen goes in the second round. Then Lamar Jackson actually goes as the QB2. And then Jalen Hurts and goes as the QB3. Mahomes goes QB4. And then we see the two second-year quarterbacks go QB5 and QB6. Is that correct to be pushing C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson? I think Anthony Richardson's actually like an easier argument to make here. Your thoughts on Stroud in the sixth round, are you that bullish on him? Or is he going to fail to return value if we're pushing him up into that range?
You're probably going to need them to add another guy with Dell and with Nico Collins. Like you're going to need, because he's not going to run at all. So Stroud's seasons of pay, it's kind of like actually why I never in years past have been a Joe Burrow guy in the fifth, sixth round, unless it was like, you know, a best ball tournament where it's, you know, I'm drafting a million teams and I got to have these stacks. But like, I've actually never had Joe Burrow in a main event. He was on the Go Bills winning team his rookie year.
That's right.
Yeah. Never had Joe Burrow in a main event, because I think guys like that are just, those are like the worst prices in the main event. Like the really elite pass only guys are just generally overpriced. Like CJ Stroud is pretty unlikely to score more passing points than Dak Prescott, right? Pretty unlikely. Like actually the pretty unlikely to just outscore Brock Purdy, honestly, points per game. I think I would be surprised if CJ Stroud outscored Brock Purdy points per game next season. I'll tell you right now, the ADP that's going to go the lowest out of all these guys is going to be Justin Fields when he doesn't have a starting job in week one. Yeah,
that's a spicy one. And I'll say a shout out to Nick also of the Go Bills. I realized earlier that I only said Dom and Sean. There's three of you guys. You guys won enough money that you all three need to be named on every podcast, and continued success to you guys. Davis, take a bird's eye view here. You said Justin Fields is the worst value here of these quarterbacks. Let's say looking at quarterbacks, starting with round seven, I took Kyler Murray and Dak Prescott also went in round seven. We see a run of quarterbacks in the eighth round. Then we see a ton of quarterbacks in the ninth round and a little bit of cleanup in rounds 10 all the way down to rounds 11. Who are the two quarterbacks or so that most intrigue you in this kind of big grouping?
Gotta be Purdy at quarterback 13 and Caleb Williams at quarterback 19. I bet, you know, again, August, you know, we got a lot more information. Purdy's going to be like the quarterback 8, and Caleb Williams is going to go high, man. Yeah. Like right now, people, the thing we're thinking about, it's like all, oh, Caleb Williams, he sucked his last three games at USC and he was crying in the stands. And why did he wait so long to declare? Like, dude, none of that stuff is going to matter in like 4 months when he's the number one overall pick. It's all gravy. All those coaches love him. You see him in the preseason. He's ripping dark. I think just the thing is Caleb Williams is like amazing for so. Yes. I don't know how any of this has gotten like that. Is just not the conversation about him. The conversation is like, oh, what should the Bears do? Dude, the Bears should just take Caleb Williams because he's unreal. The guy came in as a 17-year-old, not even an 18 yet, 17 years old for the University of Oklahoma. Spencer Rattler gets benched. Spencer Rattler, the presumed number one overall pick that year, gets benched because Caleb Williams is better than him every day in practice. And then comes in and beats the University of Texas. Like, it just, like, the guy is so, so good. I don't know. It's insane. He's so good.
Yeah, Caleb was my selection in the end of the ninth, and I really liked it. I think that, like, I agree with you. He's the truth. And he would have been the top quarterback selected last year over Bryce Young, over CJ Stroud, over Anthony Richardson fairly easily. It's prospect fatigue. And people don't like the, you know, he's not. He acts a little bit differently, but that doesn't matter at all in today's NFL, and it doesn't matter at all for our fantasy teams. It's getting way overblown. I think Caleb Williams, like you bring up Oklahoma, he played at Gonzaga High School in Washington, D.C., which is in the same league as DeMatha, one of the best high school leagues in the entire country, starts as a freshman in high school there, and people are saying, whatever, high school football. I mean, you're talking about Gonzaga is going to have two of the top 10 picks in the NFL draft. He starts as a freshman there, wins the league on a Hail Mary pass as a sophomore, and then ends up being the mega recruit, goes to Oklahoma, like you said, then transfers and wins the Heisman his first year as a transfer. So he's an unbelievable talent. I think people are going way overblown. We didn't even get to any wide receivers. So I'm going to make a couple of wide receiver questions, get you out of here, Davis. I want to dive back into the second round. Chris Olave, that's a polarizing one. In or out on him as a second round value right now?
I'm definitely like in on him, like theoretically, but I can't imagine that Chris Olave really is the 11th best wide receiver in fantasy football. I think I'd rather have Nico Collins than him. I think I'd rather have Debo than him. You know, I might even rather have Rashee Rice than him. You know, it's just like Derek Carr and like, he's just going to be the prayer yards guy forever and he's going to be good. You know, Olave, you definitely are not like trying to like sell low on him in Dynasty or anything like that. Like, I'm not saying this is some terrible pick, but I don't know. That felt rich to me.
Yeah, I can't get there. And in Dynasty, like we have him highly ranked, but he's exactly the kind of guy that I want to pivot out of because this is a massive season for him. Like, okay, you know, rookie year we flashed, Second year, we get the incredible draft capital. Doesn't really pay off, but flashed again. This year, people need to see receipts or it's going to start being a trickle down. One other wide receiver I want to ask you about is DJ Moore. Are you in or out on DJ Moore as a top 18 pick? You don't really need to expand on this one.
Out.
Okay, you're out.
Out with the information we have right now.
Is there a scenario over the summer? Let's say Caleb Williams is a Chicago Bear. Yeah, then you're in.
Then I'm in. But I think all the information that seems to be coming out of Chicago right now is that they're leaning, trading the picks and running another year back with Fields.
So you already talked about how you saw Deebo Samuel as a big value. Are you Deebo Samuel or Brandon Ayuk next year if you could pick one for your fantasy team or both?
I'm always team Deebo. I just prefer guys who can get three touchdowns in a game. Fantasy football is a weekly game. I like lots of points in one bunch.
Here's a really difficult one for a lot of managers right now. Tank Dell starts out the season red hot. Looks like he's going to be a wide receiver one, has like five games over 20 points scored in PPR. Then he gets hurt. Nico Collins was playing great early in the season, but then goes on an absolute tear, gets two like 190-yard games, catches a touchdown in the playoffs. Now the tides have completely turned. It's Nico ahead of Tank Dell everywhere. The Nico train is rolling. He goes 303 here. You're seeing him in the second round often. Where are you at on Nico Collins at the 303 or Tank Dell went at the 4-7? Which one do you think is the better value?
Yeah, I don't think Tank Dell at the 4-7. He's awesome. I love my short kings, you know, but I bet he does not end up there. I bet he ends up more like a seventh round pick when we're in the season.
Depressing to hear. I hope you're wrong on that one. I'm rooting for Tank Dell.
I'm rooting for him too. I liked him as a prospect at Houston. That's like my favorite style of guy is the smaller school, group of five school guy who has like numbers that you would not believe, like 50% of his team's receiving yards. You know, like I love dudes like that. I'm totally rooting for him, but Nico is a dog too. I don't know. They're both great.
Okay, Rashee Rice, he goes at the 304 here. Where does Rashee Rice end up being drafted at the end of August this summer? Is this about where, or could he go a little higher?
No, I think basically from the 2-8 to the 3-5 is going to kind of be where he lives. Now, the wrinkle there could be DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Evans, Tyler Lockett. One of these veteran guys becomes a chief, you know, via whatever machinations that would need to take. But that is that I think unless there's a big addition like that, that's where I think he ends up.
So we get Cooper Kupp, we get Mike Evans, older wide receivers, Jalen Waddle, Michael Pittman. Then you snipe me. You take Marvin Harrison Jr. at the 311. That one hurt me a lot. I was just waiting for him there. Talk about where you think Marvin Harrison Jr. will end up when we draft in main events.
If Marvin Harrison Jr. ends up going behind like that Kupp, Evans, Waddle, Pittman, I would be shocked if he doesn't how they do the min max. Like I'd be shocked if he doesn't go at 18th overall at least like once, right? I would be floored, especially because I don't think the Patriots take him. Now, if the Patriots take him, all bets are off, right? In terms of his rookie ceiling. Like if he ends up going to New England at 3, then he could be like a seventh round pick, honestly. Like it's like, what are we, New England last year had one guy in the top 100 picks and that guy didn't pay off his salary, you know, like they were all bad. And I don't see any reason to think they're going to be much better. So assuming if he is a Charger and Mike Williams or Keenan Allen is not on the team for whatever reason or starts the season on IR. I mean, how high can he go? Like as a Charger, how high can he go? Yeah.
To the Cardinals. And I'll even push back the enthusiasm and the steam on him. Like even if he ends up in like New England, we'll paint a picture that he's getting 165 targets. And that's the offense in New England for whoever is quarterback. So I think that where you got him is a bargain. I think he's going to keep moving up. Exceptional prospect. Your next selection was, I go So it basically goes, Davis takes Marvin Harrison Jr. I take Trey McBride and Rashad White. Then Davis goes right back to the wide receiver well with Drake London. This is before the offensive coordinator news. Now you've got to be feeling really good about that selection. Is Drake London just going to be the guy that everybody's going to steam up this summer as they get excited about his situation?
Yeah, that feels like Drake London ends like Drake London is going to go. I mean, Drake London could probably be a second round pick again, assuming a quarterback change of some degree, assuming that their quarterback room is not. If it's Tannehill, probably not. Actually,
it's not going to be Tannehill. I'll tell you what it's going to be. It's going to be either Jaden Daniels and they sell the farm and get Jaden Daniels and we'll love that. Or it's going to be Sam Howell, who's just going to sit there and some team's going to pluck Sam Howell on a trade, which they're already speculating that if Washington takes Drake May or they trade up for Caleb, then they're going to flip Sam Howell and get, they draft him in the fifth round. They'll probably get a third for him or maybe even a little bit more on some team that needs a quarterback. So you'll get a better quarterback situation in Atlanta. All these people saying Drake London, your Drake London takes are wrong because of the quarterback. I'm like, dude, who was his quarterback last year? It's going to be better. It has to be better.
Yes. Yeah. There's almost no scenario where it doesn't end up better. Yeah. I think London is definitely a riser. T. Higgins at the 4-6, he could be a huge riser depending on where he goes. Neighbors could be a riser. Smith will just be a natural riser when people forget how bad the season ended for the Eagles. Like when they just kind of, when they just move on from that,
Yeah, no, for sure. Davis, I told you I was going to keep you 45 minutes. We're already in an hour. Tell us one or two more wide receivers you like at cost in rounds 1 through 10 or, further as far as you can see on the board. And then are you in on Calvin Ridley or was that just a structural pick? You took him at the 602.
That was a structural pick, although he's definitely going to earn wide receiver 35 volume. It's just, I don't know how efficient he can be, and it's not even a lock that he is going to be a Jaguar. I really liked the Jackson Smith and Jigba pick, a wide receiver 37. That will be your classic. He ends up a fifth round pick by, May, June, July, like Sky Moore. Sky Moore had like the worst rookie season of all time. Didn't score a touchdown until the Super Bowl and ended up, he was the wide receiver 40 for like the entire offseason. JSN was better than that. Not that much better, but he was better than that. And Austin, your classic, both Hollywood Brown and Khalil Shakir, those guys are guaranteed risers. Hollywood Brown, in no reality, will end up being wide receiver. He'll be wide receiver 42 at worst. And Shakir is going to be the wide receiver 2 for the Bills by opening day. Like, that's just going to happen. So maybe, they might not even have Diggs. It might be a totally reconfigured Bills wide receiver room. So those were two really strong picks from Austin.
I like Austin's pick of Brian Thomas Jr. there. I think he'll gain some steam. I think he's going to end up being selected in like the top 18 picks. It's just hard when you keep diving into him, not to see him getting that draft capital. And then I'll say Troy Franklin in the 10th, just because I'm a big Troy Franklin guy. All those rookie wide receivers, if you're drafting early now, in best ball, dive into some of these rookie values. I think you'll like what you got. Davis, let everybody know what you have going on. Your recording schedule for this time of the year.
Yeah. So the TakeCast every week, it's going to come out on Wednesday. Undecided what the exact schedule for the off season with the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast is going to be. This will be out at least once a week. We'll do rookies. We'll do dynasty stuff. It'll be pretty dynasty focused for the next, 3 months or so. We're 89 days away from the NFL draft or something like that. So going to be a lot of drafts, a lot of prospects, things like that. And then before you know it, it's crazy, but before you know it, we will be slamming all of our action for 2024. It's going to be, you're going to blink and schedule's going to be out and it'll be time to go.
Time flies by. Hit the like button. Definitely follow Davis. Check out his work. Press coverage here. I'm doing this twice this week. Draft review with Davis. We're talking about the guys we like at ADP. And then I'm talking about 2024 rankings with Andrew Erickson on Wednesday. So look for that. Another press coverage, two press coverages this year, week on Player Profiler. Stick with us all offseason. We got you covered. And enjoy the rest of the week. And Davis Maddock, Super Bowl pick, score.
Kansas City Chiefs 24, San Francisco 49ers 21.
There you go. 24-21, Kansas City Chiefs from Davis Maddock. We'll catch you guys later.
Hey, I want to take a moment to thank you for tuning in. It's important to me that all of our media be free. This is only possible because of you, allowing a true independent sports media enterprise to thrive unlike any other in the business. So please subscribe to the All-In Package to continue to make all this possible, to ensure that all of our stats, information, data, content is available to you, especially you, the people that get the site and get the show.